Welcome to the Northern Territory Library, to all those people that have never been in here before. It's just great to have you here. His Honour, the Administrator, Mr. Tom Pauling, the Honourable Jerry McCarthy, MLA, Minister for Arts and Museum, the Honourable Ms. Malandiri McCarthy, MLA, Minister for Indigenous Development and Minister for Statehood, Chair of the Northern Land Council, Wally Wanamurra. We have the Deputy Commissioner for Police with us today too, Shane Martin, and of course we have the National Library staff here too, who have brought the medal up with them and helped us with a lot of the research. So welcome to Mary Louise and to Penny Grist for coming up here today. And of course the most important people here today are the members of the families of these people that we are celebrating today. It's great to have you here. Before we go on, there's a couple of mobile phones going off. Might turn them off. But we'd like to ask Mr. Bill Risk to come to the stand to do the formal welcome to country, please.
Good morning. I've got to apologise, I've got a flu. It gives me great pleasure to be here today and look at the families that my family have connection to as well through the story that is told here today. So I would like to pay respects to my elders and my people from past and present. I would firstly like to welcome each of the families here today, of the Johns family and to the families of Neighbour. And I'd like to extend a welcome to ministers here this morning, dignitaries and others that have travelled from interstate. Welcome, and it is good that you have come. There's a photo, or you'll see a photo of Neighbour with a group of people who worked with Government House, and of the Constable Johns with Neighbour sitting next to him. My great-grandfather is in that photo at the back. So my great-grandfather knew Neighbour as well. And therefore, we have a connection there. And there are many people who are related to the Johns and to the Neighbour family who I know from when I was growing up, and who I see some of those people in the audience today. So our connection also goes back from there right through to today. And it shows that we are still together and that our story does continue through us and into the future. So I'd like to stop now, because we need to listen to the story of why we are here. So thank you very much, and welcome to each of you.
Now it's my pleasure to introduce Her Honourable Malandiri McCarthy to the stage to talk to us.
Thank you, Joe. Firstly, can I just acknowledge the Larrakia people on whose land we've come, and I do thank you, Bill. And it's always a real privilege to represent the people of Arnhem Land in the Northern Territory Parliament, and wherever I go across the Northern Territory and across Australia, to always remind our fellow Australians that Australia has a black history, a very strong history that is very much alive and well, and wherever we go, to acknowledge the traditional owners. I'd like to acknowledge his administrator, Tom Pauling and Tessa Pauling, also to my colleague, Jerry McCarthy, to the chairman of the Northern Land Council, and to Wally. Hey, Wally. And distinguished guests. And a very, very, very warm welcome to all our families here from the Nooka and Hudson Downs region. I know this is a pretty special day, hey, And this is about a pretty amazing man whose story is shared not only by our families in the Nooka and Hudson Downs region, Gulf Country, but it's a story that all Australians and indeed all people around the world should feel some pride about. And a very, very warm welcome to the descendants of the Constable, Johns, who are here. And I'm just haven't had a full chance to get around and meet you, so I look forward to doing that. But to those of you who I have met, a warm welcome to you here today. This year in the Northern Territory, it's 100 years of the Territory being a Territory, from when South Australia surrendered us to the Commonwealth 100 years ago. Under the Surrender Act of the South Australian Parliament, and then under the Acceptance Act of the South Australian and Federal Parliaments, we then became a territory of the Commonwealth. So throughout this year, as Minister for Statehood, we are also looking at centenary events where we ask the people of the Northern Territory and the people of Australia to reflect on the democratic history of the Northern Territory and to look at the relationships and the stories of our past, the stories that are good and the stories that are bad, but to look at how we can improve and walk together as Australians in this country and as Australians in the Northern Territory with pride about our culture as Aboriginal people, standing strong wherever we are, but standing strong together with those around us. This story today is quite extraordinary. And I think it really hits at the heart of what we ask of each other in terms of walking together. The story of Neighbour is incredibly symbolic because of not only the fact that he was the first Aboriginal man, Aboriginal person in this country to receive such a recognition by the then King George at that time. It's symbolic because of the human relationship between black and white people. If you consider the story and how he came about this medal and how he was recognised for his gallant behaviour and the awarding of such courageous behaviour, he was not just a man travelling with a non-Aboriginal man. He was a prisoner in chains. A prisoner who had chains around his neck, a prisoner who was being made to walk thousands and thousands of kilometres from the Nooka Hudson Downs region to here to Darwin City. In a time when it was the wet season, in a time when there was flooding, and in a time when no doubt relationships between a prisoner and a police officer, a black prisoner and a police officer, were probably incredibly questionable. Harsh, confronting, isolating, these are the circumstances which surrounded Neighbour, and these are the circumstances which surround the time of what he did, which we recognise today. When he was crossing the Wilton River in those chains, and when the accident occurred for the police officer on that horse, I'm sure there were many things he could have done. But he chose to do the one thing that we hope we can all do when we're found in situations where bravery and courage is really required of any human being anywhere in the world, and that is to act to save another person's life. And that is what your Mimi, your Gagu, your father, your uncle, that's what he did, you mob. He didn't think about himself. He thought about this man who was struggling to survive in a croc-infested river. And he thought not of himself in chains, but his spirit thought about someone else. And that is what we remember today. And that is what each of you family members can carry strongly in your heart. Because the survival of his story And his action is what lives on in you today to continue to survive with strength and courage to find a better way forward for yourself and your families. That act of bravery between two men that we acknowledge today also goes on to show that it cemented a relationship between neighbour and the police officer Johns for the decades that followed. And that relationship has spanned now even more decades as the descendants come together. And I think it's important that you, as the direct family members who come together, keep that special relationship going, because there is a bond there that no one else can give you and no one else can take away from you. And you need to hold on to that pretty precious thing. For the rest of us who look at this story, we can take lots away from it too. And the act of bravery and courage that it takes, no matter what the circumstances are. I'd like to make special mention of Don Christofferson. Don, I think your work in this area is outstanding, and your passion and commitment to wanting to look at the history of stories, Aboriginal people across the Northern Territory, is a testament to the reality that we have stories here that need to be told. We have stories here that need to be respected. So our theme for this centenary year is 100 years of the Northern Territory and over 50,000 years of stories. And ladies and gentlemen, I'll leave it to Don to tell you this story, but I'd like to say it's a pretty special moment here today, and I welcome you all to be very much a part of this special occasion. Thank you.
And now I'd like to introduce the administrator, Mr. Tom Pauling.
Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, it's a real honour as the 19th administrator of the Northern Territory to be here with the descendants of Neighbour and Mulga Bill to commemorate the bravery of a territory hero. And not only as my own research officer, a direct descendant of Mulga Bill, but one of the first places we went to when Mrs. Pauling and I took on the office of administrator together was to Minyiri on Hodson Down, so that I'm well aware of where all this story is being told. In deference to the extraordinary work which has been undertaken by Darwin historian Don Christofferson and to those family members who will address us today, I'll not delve into the particulars of Neighbour's brave actions, nor of his lasting friendship with Mulga Bill, which was struck that fateful day in 1911. I will not, in short, steal his thunder. I will, however, recount briefly the process which led to my predecessor, Dr. John Anderson Gilruth, the first administrator, finally bestowing Neighbour with his honour. On the 7th of May in 1912, almost a year after the event, Dr. Gilruth was advised that Neighbour was to be awarded the Albert Medal, an honour only granted at the monarch's discretion, to acknowledge the characteristics of bravery, compassion, and mercy. The awarding of this medal caused great controversy in the halls of government, both here and in the United Kingdom. It was a time in our history when many thought that humanity was not a part of the genetic makeup of our Indigenous people. In what would be a shocking read for our youth of today, former Prime Minister Sir George Reid wrote to the King's private secretary, Sir Arthur Bigg, in support of the honour. However, he describes Aboriginal people as among the most degraded of the dark races, a telling indication of the ignorance of our past. Reid's letter was only one minor part of a lengthy process, which began with a recommendation from the Australian Board of Missions in 1911 to the Minister for External Affairs, who went on to conduct an inquiry, form a report, and then write to the Royal Humane Society. It was thought that the Royal Humane Society would take this up on their own. However, they wrote back to the Prime Minister asking him to fill out a nomination form, which he refused to do. A different path to honours was pursued, and no doubt Don will tell us about this. This went on for quite some time and also involved the Office of the Governor-General until final notification was sent to Dr. Gilruth accompanied by a request to report back in detail to the Prime Minister's office on the outcome of the investiture. It was thought the investiture would greatly assist the wider Aboriginal population to learn of humanity and establish reputable ideals. As a result of the news, 7 months of preparation began at Government House, and on the 16th of December 1912, Dr. Gilruth had the honour of investing the Alawa man with a British Imperial decoration. The occasion was witnessed by many, including his former captor and now friend, Mulga Bill. Neighbour's medal remained in Dr. Gilruth's care at Government House to prevent it, and I quote, falling into the wrong hands. Although it was available, it might be said, to be worn on formal occasions. One such truly formal occasion was when he was charged with murder, and he wore a police tunic, jacket and the Albert medal in the dock. I might go on to say he was acquitted. If it was not for the efforts of the Australian Mission Board and all those who lobbied, the investiture would never have taken place. Indeed, if it wasn't for Neighbour, none of the many descendants of Mulga Bill would be with us today, including Territory Sporting Identity Charlie King and his twin sister, and my own research officer, Craig Kitchen. Neighbour and those like him are an inspiration to all. In the coming days, I will honour 17 Territorians for their brave conduct at an investiture ceremony at Government House. The Greek historian and author Thucydides captures the act of bravery with these words: "The bravest are surely those who have the clearest vision of what is before them, glory and danger alike, and yet notwithstanding go out to meet it." That's precisely what Neighbour did a century ago, and some brave souls still do today. I thank the Northern Territory Library for inviting me to participate in this special event, which has brought you all together and allows all Territorians to commemorate and remember the actions of a Territory hero called Neighbour. Thank you.
Thank you very much, the Administrator. And now we could have Don Christopherson to give us a presentation, please.
Thank you. Distinguished guests, the family of Mr. Neighbour, the family of Mr. Johns. This story I read about 5 years ago, and it was just a three-liner, and it was about a convicted felon who was awarded a medal for saving a policeman, and that was it. The story moved me to want to know more. So I started researching and talking to people. And after a while, I found more and more information. And the information, as it gathered, amazed me more and more. It blew me away, the story. And then I started finding the families. And the families' story blew me away too, because it just kept growing and growing, the story. And the story was never told at school. When I went to school at Nycliffe Primary or Darwin High School, and this is a story that we need to teach our children. And it's not about black or white. It's not about prisoner or policeman. It's a story about humanity, about what people do when they're in difficult circumstances. And Mr. Neighbour saved a life that day. And with that saving of one life, he saved many lives. People are here today. And that's the power of the story and the basis of the story. The Johns brothers joined the police force in South Australia in 1906. And they travelled to the Northern Territory to take up their jobs here with the Northern Territory Police Force. Jack Johns, the younger brother of William Johns. Mr. William Johns arrested Mr. Neighbour on a charge of larceny. What did he steal? Might have been a bullock because they were hungry. And they got to the Wilton, and Mr. John says it was half a mile wide, and we got to swim, and there's just the two of them. So they grabbed the saddle on either side and start swimming, and the horse gets spooked halfway across. And when the horse gets spooked, it ain't going to swim no more. It goes under and kicks the policeman in the head. Mr. Neighbour sees the policeman floating downstream, nothing he can do. He gets ashore, and then he turns around and he sees a hand holding on to a branch in the middle, and he decides to wrap the chain around his neck once more and go in, and brings him ashore. Mr. Johns, on regaining his senses when he reaches ashore, says, "Let's keep going. We've got to go to the Roper Bar police station." They get to the Roper Bar police station, and he says to the officer in charge, "He is the prisoner, and I have no evidence to offer." And they say, "Well, whatever. Let's let him go. Before you go, what about working for us?" This is where Mr. Neighbour becomes a police tracker, a famed police tracker in the Northern Territory, because not only did he save one life, he saved more lives later on in the 40s. He was also a man who they relied upon because of his loyalty and devotion to his job. He was a man the stations of Nutwood and Hodson relied on for his ability as a stockman. And yet very little, we see not one word written by this man. Well, he probably couldn't read and write. But great men all don't have to read and write. And we have many great men and women of the Northern Territory who've contributed to our society and our history, and Mr. Neighbour is one of those people. This photograph shows that man there. And Mr. Risk, that's his great-grandfather, and his name was Billy Shepherd. And Mr. Shepherd, he also saved a life. He saved Mr. Gilruth's life. And they must have been out at Shoal Bay somewhere, and the car broke down. And in those days, it was a long way out. And Mr. Shepherd ran all the way back into Darwin to get help, because they had no food, no water. And for his bravery that day in saving Gilruth's life, he was awarded a job for life with his family and protection of Government House. The other residents of Darwin weren't that happy with Mr. Shepherd for saving Gilruth. And this is how they chained people in those days. It wasn't a light chain. So when Neighbour went into the water, he was taking his life into his hands too. They both men could have drowned that day.
And people could be arrested.
People could be arrested for the most minor offence. In Darwin, you could have been arrested for being out after 7 o'clock. You could have been arrested because someone accused you of something, because you said the wrong thing. Many Aboriginal people became criminals and were convicted of offences for the most minor offences. I'm going to stop my story there because I want to introduce a member of the family of Mr. Johns, first of all. I'd like to call on Mr. Greg Johns to come up and say a few words. Thank you.
What a story.
Just first of all, just to pay tribute again, first time to Darwin. And, I must admit, meeting everybody, a bit of emotive stuff going on here. To Larrakia people to make acknowledgement as well. Always say, back in Adelaide, where I'm from as well, acknowledgement, but I always think in terms of care of place and actually looking after place. I think that's one acknowledgement, you know, across Australia that should be given to Aboriginal people was care and looking after place for, you know, beyond capitalable time. Something that you did so well at this point in time, still as a European person coming to this country from, you know, from which there is still so much to be learnt, you know, so much to be learnt. Just a few things. My grandfather, my main contact with my grandfather, I'm quite a young boy from five to say, in the end he dies when I'm 17. So I would go into a room at his house in St. Peter's, and there was this big man, he was 6'4". And on his wall there would be photographs. One of the photographs that stood out was this, you know, that boxing pose of, you know, this guy 6'4". So my grandfather was also heavyweight boxing champion of the police force in Australia and never defeated in that role. It was a high title, you know, to hold as heavyweight boxing champion. He did that because when his mother died in mid-north of South Australia in tough times, his mother made the boys promise that they would never drink again. A truly cruel thing to do in some ways, I think. So then it's 17, the boys in Mallee country in South Australia, when the boys often left, they were often put on the railway lines at 17 with, you know, a couple of pound and food and water, and they had to go and make their own way. Now, because my grandfather didn't drink, he was getting the beaten out of him by the other guys stirring him up that he didn't drink, so he learnt to box, and that's where the boxing thing came from. Just a few other quick things, just to fill in the story a bit. He was involved, I only found this out myself a year ago, he was involved in the last cavalry charge at Bathsheba, you know, the film The Light Horseman was made about. He was in one of the side attacks, not the major attack. As a boy, I would go into my grandfather's room and I used to bring in other friends to scare them. He didn't know about this. And there was a 44-gallon drum filled with decapitated heads. These were Eastern decapitated heads, so presumably during the Light Horse Cavalry charge, there was some pretty tough stuff that went on. And another little story that there's a number of stories about my grandfather up here. He was out on horseback at one stage, I think with another police officer. His official patrol borders were between Queensland and the West Australian border, not likely to cover. Out on horseback one day, and one of the guys said to him, "Bill, we've heard you're the best shot in the Northern Territory." And my grandfather said, "Oh yeah." He said, "That tree we just passed filled with the cockatoos. I'll throw a rifle behind my back and I'll shoot one of those cockatoos down for you and show you how good I am." So he threw the rifle down behind his back. He pulled the trigger. It was a complete and utter bullshit one. He hit a cockatoo, it fell dead to the ground. My grandfather, of course, he let the story grow. And, of course, the guy got back to Darwin or whatever and told the story to everywhere, and it spread through the whole of the Northern Territory about this guy's marksmanship. So just a little bit of background there. As a young fella, he took himself to China. Amazing, you know, he just took himself on a boat to China. So he did these sort of exploratory sort of things. So he received the OBE at a point in time too, just out of interest. But in 62 in Adelaide, another memory of my grandfather who had a big impact on me was that he would say to me, "What's the most important thing in life?" You know, I was like, "Oh yeah, Grandpa, you know, I'm sick of hearing this, why are you telling me this stuff?" He would say, "You had to be a free thinker." I mean, I think it's one of the most important things in life, but I think it's an important one. And I do remember, too, that, you know, for 62 in Adelaide, I don't mind saying when I was being brought up, these were pretty damn racist times still. And my grandfather would talk about neighbour in the story and continually with other people in the room, he would say, you know, these trackers, these blackfellas up in the Northern Territory, these are great people, they're wonderful people. I can't say my own father spoke as well of Aboriginal people, but my grandfather did. So for a man who came out of, you know, Victoria, England, brought up with that sort of value system and that, through this story, I think, you know, he'd expanded himself as a person, and I think he grew and, you know, grew a lot as a person from this. And so for me today, it's been a bit overwhelming, and coming down here and seeing, you know, the number of 185 relatives now, it is quite extraordinary, and it's somewhat overwhelming, and I found that a bit today. Just quickly, too, I haven't met really yet, but as regards Mr. Neighbour and the people who've come here, what do I sort of say? You've got to say, you know, just, you know, thanks, and, you know, what an unbelievable thing to do. And as you said, I think, you know, the story even goes beyond the actual story. As you said, that somebody carries out this act at that point in time, you know, it's sort of what life in the end. I think life's more about, it's actually about the stories. It's not so much about all the political stuff that goes on and things like that. So it almost becomes that universal sort of story, so of bravery and just an amazing act. I must say that in Adelaide, in the car a few months ago, I did have, though, a senior Kaurna woman, and Kaurna are the local mob down there who I've done some work with as well. And I was telling her the story, and Georgina, she was in the front seat, and she turned to me and she said, "Only a black fella would have done that." Okay, so that's probably enough from me. So, I mean, from my side, as in the sculptor I brought up, which I made unknowingly about this event coming up, in the end, there's a big hand that reaches out from that and it tries to tell the story it is, so the neck brace and such is still there. But for me, there is sort of a bit of a positive thing through meeting Wendy and the other people I've met today. So, it's almost beyond word story, which I think is great. And just my thank you again to, just quickly to, yeah, the people from the library and Don, who I only met yesterday, but Don's done research work on this. It's just extraordinary and unbelievable type stuff. So hopefully that... And to neighbours, descendants, again, a very special thank you as well.
I'd like to call on Charlie. Charlie King, thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much, and to the family of Neighbour, how great to see you here today. And who'd have thought that what happened 100 years ago would bring us all here today? It's extraordinary, isn't it? I'm sitting there listening to Greg, and I'm thinking, goodness me, what is this all about? It's just the most amazing story, and stories within stories. And my story, of course, is a story within all of that story, because we're connected to all of this through our mother, of course, who is the daughter of... William John. So we know a lot about her story, not a lot about the John's story, not a lot about the neighbour's story, but we do know another part of it, and I wanted to share with you a little bit of that. I want to recognise and acknowledge my sister Cheryl, my twin sister, good to see you, dear, and Craig, who our nephew, who writes speeches for the administrators. This is a funny world we live in. I don't know what's coming up next. It's quite extraordinary. Anyway, Mum was born at Limbunya Station near Kalkarindji. She was a Gurindji woman, and she was taken away under the policy of that era to the Carlin compound, and lived in Carlin compound until she was a teenager of about 18 years of age. And my dad comes from Corowa in New South Wales, and actually rode a pushbike to Darwin to show just how good Malvern Star pushbikes were, and got almost to Darwin with his friend Basil Nixon when the gun that they were strangely carrying between them to frighten off the Aborigines, of which they were so afraid of, actually went off and shot one of them through the leg. Not Dad, but the other man, and so he was sent back to Melbourne, and Dad was stranded in Darwin and stayed here, and then met my mum when he got sunstruck working in Darwin, had to go to hospital. As an Irishman, he didn't know about staying out of the sun, and so he finished up in Darwin Hospital and met my mum there, and within a very short time, he actually told me these words. He said he woke up in his hospital bed and he saw Mum there, and I don't know whether he got this out of a book, but he said he saw her and he thought that he'd died and gone to heaven, and there was this angel standing in front. It's a good line. It's worked since, and it probably worked before as well. But anyway, shortly after he got the opportunity to meet Mum and got permission from Dr. Cook at the time to be able to take her out to the pictures. I think the pictures then was the old Star Pictures here in Smith Street, and they went off to the movies a few times together, and then finally they got married. And Dad was, at that time, the marriage was about trying to encourage those children like Mum not to go back to their families, but to marry into the non-Indigenous world and stay there. But Dad, to his credit, wanted Mum to go back to her family as soon as possible. So he actually took her. They left Darwin and got on a horse and rode back to Kalkarindji and spent time. And Dad met Mum's mum and spent quite a bit of time there, and they got to know each other. And then he did the most amazing thing when they came back to Darwin. He said to Mum, "You must meet your father." And Mum said, "Look, I don't know him, and, you know, I don't even know where he is." And Dad, this is, you know, many, many years ago, Dad said, "We'll find out who he is and where he is." And Dad was able to do it. There's a story in that all by itself. So he found out where Johns was, and he was actually in Alice Springs, in Adelaide, rather, and had been the Commissioner of Police and all these sorts of things. And Dad said, "We have to go. We have to go to Adelaide." And just think for a minute, here's Mum from Limbunya to Darwin, to Catherine, to Limbunya and back to Darwin. Adelaide is, you know, it's the other side of the world. It's just impossible to think that they could actually do that. And did it, they did, though. They left Darwin, got to Catherine, found their way down to Alice Springs, found their way down to Adelaide, found where Johns lived, William Johns lived. Dad was a detective. He must have been. He found where he lived. And he said to Mum, "You have to go in and see him." He was driven, my dad, by the need for my mum to meet her father. And so Mum nervously went in to the house that you would know, Greg, that we don't know. And she knocked on the door. And Dad's recollection of it was that the maid answered the door. "Did Grandfather Johns have a maid?" No, he didn't. And Dad, well, see, Dad got something wrong. But someone opened the door and let Mum in, and she was able to go and meet her father and sit down and have a chat with him. They spent about 40 minutes together, Dad said, as he waited outside. Grandfather Johns gave her some money, and she turned out, left the house and came back out and got with Dad and drove all the way back and came all the way back to Darwin again. But the important thing, I think, ladies and gentlemen, about all of that is my mother was able to go back and connect with her mother on her Aboriginal side, and with her father on her non-Aboriginal side. And she grew up to be a person with no bitterness, no anger in her. She understood the world as it was. She told us about both sides of her family. We knew of William Johns and thought one day we might do something about it and maybe we could go and visit him. And an amazing thing, I've never told this story before, but I must tell you that an amazing thing happened. It's an awful story, children, so close your ears. I was at the ABC and I was sitting on the toilet. And the radio's going, you can hear it in the toilet. And in the studio, they are interviewing the author of a book written by Jack Johns, the brother of William Johns. So I hear this story and they're talking about it, and it's about William Johns and Jack. And there's a book written about it called The Patrol, Up the Patrol or something. It's about the, what's it called? Patrolling the Big Up. So I was able to then go off and get the book and read the book and find out a lot more about the story through that book. So there's a history that was written about Jack Johns, the brother of William Johns. And anyway, Mum was able to come back and feel pretty good about having met her father, and we've had an opportunity to now catch up with Greg, which we were able to do. And so, Greg, I don't know how many people have you said of your family here, but I think you mentioned 170-odd. On our side alone, there's probably 300 or 400 over there as well. So you might not leave the territory, my friend. But It is really good to see you. Anyway, it's a wonderful story. We feel proud to be part of it. A brave man indeed was Neighbour, and we think a brave man as well was William Johns, and the things that he showed and the things he did and the compassion that he showed as well meant that he was a fine person as well. I just want to make this last little comment about that. He went to China and wanted to go to China, and all my life I wanted to go to China for no reason. And I'd say to my wife, I want to go to China. She'd say, why? I said, I don't know. We'll go to China. And I've been to China a couple of times, so maybe it lives within you, Greg. I don't know. Don, you've done a fantastic job, mate. I've known you for a long time, and it's terrific to bring all this to life and to give us all an opportunity to meet here today. And again, just as I leave here, I want to say to Neighbour's family, we need to know you more, and we're going to make an effort to do that. So thanks for coming here, and thanks to the Northern Land Council too, who made it possible for you to come here. We were worried that you might not be able to get here, and to all the relatives of the Johns family as well. Good to see you all here today. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
I'd like to call on Peter Espy, but just a quick story. So he comes to Darwin, he gets awarded this medal, they send him back to Roper, and 3 years later, he's now been accused of murder in 1915. And the story goes, as Territorians do, sometimes they go pig shooting, but these guys go pig spearing. And so a group of them head out from Nooka, and one man walks with a limp, and he returns halfway through the day. Other men, as the day wears on, become tired and travel back. At the end of the day, one man has not returned. It's the man with the limp. And people start to surmise and why he hasn't come back, and they search for him. And everyone agrees he's been murdered. And because now Mr. Neighbour lives with his wife, the finger is pointed at him, and the arresting officer of Mr. Neighbour is the brother of William, Jack Johns, and he said it was a terrible task to do, to arrest this man who saved my brother and advise him that he's been charged with murder and I've got to take you to Darwin, and we don't know how it's going to go. So, yeah, new police uniform, tracker uniform, wearing the medal, standing in the dock, but everyone speaks on his behalf and says what a wonderful man he is, and we do not think he did the murder. There was no body. No one saw him do it. You're acquitted. You can go home to your job as a tracker. So he goes home again. And to think about, you know, this man being arrested twice and still worked.
He didn't bear no grudge. He did the job. He just modified what I did too.
You're right.
All right. I'll call on Peter Espy.
I heard that. Hello, everyone. Billy Johns, what a man. My grandmother said that he was a bull, I'd say, because it seems like he had many children. I'm related to my grandmother. My mother's here. Wendy Espy, Laurel Burke, Laura McMasters. They're from Roper River, born at Roper River. So this might be a family to us as well as the Billy Johns side. Greg, through Billy Johns, you are cousins to my mother's. Or the other way to say it is Bunga from this country. And for us, you're Mulri, you're like our uncle. Well, either way you look at it, you're our uncle. From all the family, welcome, mate. We have heard this story from our grandmother growing up, And it appears that you might mention earlier that there's some things don't add up, but you can appreciate that story being manipulated that many times from a woman from that era, told from missionaries, her family. The story goes that we're led to believe that Billy Johns had a wife. She also was a hell of a woman. Her name was Judy. Well, she wasn't a wife. She was a domestic cleaner in the police station at the old Roper Bar police station. And being a man, I guess, he felt the need that he had to have a woman. So Judy was his chosen one. And throughout that time somewhere, Billy Johns had to go away, and this is the way that we know the story. We've been told the story through our grandmother, is that Billy Johns had to go away and left this woman there, Judy, pregnant, and she gave birth to our grandmother, Murray Burke. But before Billy Johns went away, he said to his one of his trackers there, Peter, he was a Nullarkun man, you take care of this baby. So Murray Burke had two fathers, one black one, one white one. And she was also always very proud to tell that story that she had a black father and she had a white father. She did not know her white father. I need a drink of water, please, if someone can get me. I'm starting to dry up. Edward, please. Her black father looked after her for a couple of years, and then at some stage in that process she went into the mission. Excuse my lisping, and I've got a fairly dry... I'm fairly nervous, as you can probably see. But this story has been with us since yeah. I'll get a job out of here again tonight, I think.
You can just promote us on this.
Oh, thank you. That's better. Yeah, so this story's been in our family for a long time, as far as I can recall. And it's been told here several times already that prisoners of that era, particularly black ones, were treated like the cattle that they allegedly killed, I suppose, you know, in shackles and chains. And to be escorting this man by foot, this hero here, and then get to a swollen river in flood and swim across, weighted down with chains, is some effort to get to the other side. But then to turn around and see the person who's leading you to jail, suffering in the water, nearly dead, drowning, and then to make that decision to jump back in the water with those chains weighing you down and save this, my great-grandfather, is something special. You know, not to mention, like it was said here before, that there was croc-infested waters. So it definitely deserved the highest awards for an act of bravery. If you think about it, we sat there last night thinking, oh yeah, well, geez, I don't know what to say about this. But if you really do think about it, this is Australian history, and a lot of movies have made of Australian history about these sort of events. And no doubt, sometime maybe in our lifetime, there may be a movie that's made about this. And I thought I'd just throw it in that You know, I suppose it could be said that it may be something along the lines of love thy neighbour. But you know, I think, you know, I can assure you that Billy Johns has probably said that too. To this man here. Love you. So I'd like to close that now, but I'd just like to mention, I'd like to give my grandmother a plug here because she was a marvellous woman. This occasion not only holds worth in Australian history, but it just reinforces what and supports all the stories that she's been telling us all along. Okay, thank you.
Another job that Mr. Neighbour was involved in is a little-known story, and it took place in the late 20s. And the story started with a ship that was coming to Darwin, and the ship, the steamer Guthrie, Douglas Mawson, and on its way to Darwin in the Gulf of Carpentaria, somewhere near Groote Island, the ship hit a cyclone. And all hands were lost. And the people of Darwin were distraught because family were lost. Stores were lost. They knew all those people on board, children, women. And a legend grew out of that story. They said some white women had survived and were now being held captive in Arnhem Land. And so this story, this legend grew in Darwin. And so by the late 20s, an expedition had been organised on this old steamer in Darwin to travel to Arnhem Land to find these white women who were being held captive by the blacks. And, well, the steamer they used, it took 4 hours to get from the wharf to East Point. And the people waving, wanting at East Point, ready to wave them off, where are they, you know? It took them 4 hours to get out there. It was not a good ship to be on. It was full of old men, alcohol and guns, and that's how they were going to go out there and find these white women. Well, they went out there, and Neighbour travelled up from the Roper, scouting the country. White women were ever found. People said, no white women live here. But we were very lucky that no one was injured in that crusade by the people of Darwin that day. But these are some of the amazing stories that are part of our history. The last group and the most important group are the family of Mr. Neighbour, and I'd like to call on Derek, the grandson, to say a few words. Thank you, Derek. Daryl, sorry.
I just want to say I'm happy and proud to be here, seeing all the wonderful faces. We are all here today because of one man and what he did. The bravery and heart that he went through and what he did, it was for a purpose. It was for this day. It was to bring us together for this day and remember the people, the past, and what they did. And I just want to say from my heart, I wish I would have stand to the people that my grandfather once had helped, to the people that he know, to their hand and shook their hands. I just want to say, we're all brothers and sisters, and what he did, it was for a purpose. It was for this day, and what he did. I'm all our man. And I'm the second grandchildren. And I just want to say, as a young Aboriginal, from generation to generation, what I've learned to my dad, from my fathers, and what they've learned from their fathers, that our land was given to us from generation to generation to generation. It was given to us through our Aboriginal Dreamtime story and history. That is what I've learned. And the wonderful thing is, there are a lot of people doing amazing things every day. There are a lot of people helping one another in every ways, in any ways. And we'll be always keep carrying on. And I'm so happy and proud to be here, standing and sharing. Because what I've learned from my dad, from my fathers, and what they've learned from their fathers, that we will always carry what this man will do and what he did. Before we came, one of my dad cried because he knew what was coming up here for. It was for the medal that the bravery of my grandfather and what he did. And I thank the people that was holding on to what he did, that it'll be passed on to my kids and their kids. And we'll be sharing and holding hands. We'll be working together, shoulder to shoulder together always, and helping one another. And that's, as an Aboriginal like me, that's what I've learned, to help. That man was a hero to me now. I know my grandfathers, they were like a warriors. And still today, my people, they are still carrying on and helping. There are a lot of wonderful people doing amazing things night and day, every day. One day it'll be your kids doing a greatest thing for the future. From my people back home, that will be the most wonderful thing. And it's like taking my grandfather back home, where his message will be for the future, sharing. And that's what I've learned. Back home, my land wasn't given to me. I didn't buy my land. My land was given to me through my Aboriginal Dreamtime story and history. I'm connected to my land, to my people, to the dreaming. Also, my body got a skin name. And all of us, we are today because of what my grandfather did. What he did was the bravery and heart that he went through, that was amazing. He did it for a purpose, to bring us together in this very day, right here. And to finish in this story, I like to say, you will always be in remembrance. Seeing him, you will see him through the grandchildren, through the eyes of his grandchildren like me. And I'm happy to be here, and thank you.
That concludes what we had today, but can I just say the original medal is over there, and the sculpture by Mr. Johns is over there, and please go over and have a look. I spoke with the National Library yesterday, and the story was two replicas have been made of the medal, and they told me that one replica is for this building forever. They told me the other replica is for the building in Canberra, the museum in Canberra, but they never said about the original, because they're waiting on the family to ask them to send them a letter. And once they get the letter, that original medal goes back to this family. thank you very much for your support today and attendance, and hopefully we can bring forward more stories of this nature about our great territory and how Aboriginal people have worked and contributed to society. Thank you.
And I think we should have one more round of applause for the work that Don has done for this project. Thank you. He's driven us to find fantastic resources and to make that contact with the National Library. It's been very beneficial in the National Archives, so we're glad we were able to find some of those pieces of the jigsaw. Thank you very much, Darren, for your fantastic words. And yes, he was a hero, and thanks for coming in to see you today. And I hope everyone can go down and have a look at the medal and have a look at the sculpture. Thanks to Greg. Thank you, everyone.